Okay, welcome. A couple minutes late going live, but won't make a difference for you podcast listeners. Might be a little visually crunchy. I'm One Divine, and I'm coming to you live from Mount Shasta, California for episode 3 featuring my longtime awesome friend, Alan W. Green, from Stratford-upon-Avon. And we'll talk a little bit about why he's there, but I'm just introducing while he's getting himself situated. I can see him in the VIP green room here at StreamYard, and he just got himself a cup of tea. And this is my first official guest, and I wanted it to be Alan because I know for a fact that we have some good stories about signs, symbols, synchronicity, tuning in, crazy magic things happening, which is the kind of point and purpose of the One Divine podcast, to talk about how we divine, how many other people use their intuitive gifts in such different crazy ways. I shouldn't say crazy. It's not crazy. It's innate. And that's the whole point. We are innately divine beings. We are innately able to access our intuition, which has been a little numbed because we've been a little comfortable and it's been a little dense, but we're sparking up pretty good. So I want to share stories because it also fascinates me how people receive, what their receiving modality is. It's how they get their information, tap into source, tap into their higher self, tap into their guidance, their team, whatever that is. And I'm endlessly fascinated. And I think that it would be nerdy and fascinating for you too, if you want to hear some of these stories and also what people are doing with the information that they are receiving. So without further ado, I'm going to pop in Alan Green. I am getting a little bit of an echo, Alan. It's not too bad. Is it going?
Sounds fine. Yeah.
It is here.
Technology. You could even, we are just one divine being and echoing each other's thoughts back and forth. Does that help?
We've got some good stories to tell. So I'm going to set up this little video that I'm going to share that we're talking about. And Melanie Isom, who is on here, her husband filmed this. They just got together. I'll let Alan tell about that. But as I said, we talk about signs, symbols, and synchronicity. And this is how Alan and I met over 10 years ago when a mutual friend, Michael Dunn, saw that we had a mutual nerdosity, pattern recognition, sign watching, media production overlap, commonality. And then we ended up meeting, and what he was finding in Shakespeare was completely aligned with a whole bunch of my one, which I didn't even know that I would do this whole one thing. That one has been part of the whole story. And that is how we met, with his codes, with my decoding and all of that. And along the way, we're picking up more people who play the game, who decode, who receive, and not only receive, have connecting pieces. And you're going to find that a lot if you're one of them, that we're connecting pieces of the puzzle very quickly now with our teams, on our missions, on our life adventures. So this is a little funny remake. I'll let Alan tell the story, how he met Melanie Isom in Stratford-upon-Avon, where he is right now. And then he said, oh, you need to meet one. And now this is going on to another level of said nerdy connecting dot puzzle solving friend soul family team. Okay, that's it. Go ahead, Alan.
You want me to introduce what we're going to show, right? Okay. This is a piece of genius editing from Dale, who Melanie's husband. And it's just, we were just recreating. They came to Stratford last week to connect and interview me about what I was doing, what I am doing now in Stratford. But along the way, we happened to pass by the place where we first met. And so we just said, oh, let's sort of do a recreation of it. So let me first tell you what we're doing a recreation of. And then I think One Divine is going to show you the actual video that Dale just made up. It's great. I came to Stratford back in January to do a preliminary sort of reconnaissance of how I might be received at the church, because I had not been back to the church in, well, several years. 13 years ago, I had come to Holy Trinity Church in Stratford and done the naughty deed. And the naughty deed is that I had radar scanned the altar stone. And I think most of you who are familiar with my work know all about that. So I don't need to recap that. But the reason I was radar scanning it was because the codes told me clearly something is in there. And the only way that that would be treated seriously was if I got actual scientific proof. If I just came to Stratford and said, hey, I've got these codes, and they say you've got something in your altar, I'd be treated just like every other person who's tried to solve this Shakespeare problem for a good, it's been going on really for a good almost 200 years that people have been trying to solve it. It's 400 years old itself, but it only became a thing sort of 200 years ago that maybe it's not the guy from Stratford, maybe it's somebody else. So anyway, I come back to Stratford last January to really just come clean and tell the church, you know, I'm the guy that did that. You might not like the fact that I did it, but I'm here to tell you that I really do truly want to help the church with their fundraising. And I also want to begin now opening up the question as to what we should do with the altar stone. Because it's not just going to get opened. It's a holy relic. It's so sacred to the church. It's the most sacred spot in the church. It's the Holy of Holies. So obviously, you know, they're not going to just go, oh yeah, let's open it. But my purpose was to say, let's do a better scan, a more thorough scan. I had done it 13 years ago with a little handheld. Now let's bring in a whole sort of Kaiser Permanente MRI thing where you can really do a thorough scan and actually see what's inside there. Because my first scan proved that there's a lot of stuff in there inside a hole that is 250 times the size it's supposed to be. So I had come to Stratford to just open up that conversation. I fly into Heathrow, I get my rental car, I don't even bother with London, I just get in my car and I drive up the highway to Stratford, about an hour and a half, 2 hours. You can't park anywhere in Stratford, it's all policed ridiculously. If you find a spot, you can only park there for 2 hours anyway and you cannot then return to that spot. It's being patrolled all the time. But I drive into Stratford. And I'd booked myself a room in a little tiny place. I wasn't going to get myself a fancy hotel or anything. I was just in a little bed and breakfast. And as I drive into Stratford, there's a parking space right there, right in front of the place that I booked myself into. One spot. And I go, oh, great. And I just drive in to that spot. And I go and put my money in the machine. Get a little ticket. You put the ticket on your windshield to say you're okay for 2 hours. I go into the bed and breakfast place, park my bags in my room, clean up a little bit like you do after a long journey, but I know that I've got to come right out and, you know, move my car. I've got to find an overnight parking space, and that's the whole system. Oh, you can't park here. You've got to go into a place where they charge you a fortune to park overnight. So I know I've got to move it anyway. So I'm only in my bed and breakfast place for half an hour, and I come out. I come straight out. The door is here and my car is 5 feet away, and I get into the car and I'm about to drive off, and this woman is looking at me, staring at me rather intently, just a few feet away, right in the doorway where I just came out of the bed and breakfast. And I don't know her, and I'm thinking, what does she want? And my memory of it is different from her memory of it, but as is usually the case, in my version, I roll the window down and I say, you want this parking space? I've got a ticket here. You can use that. You know, there's an hour and a half still left on it. That's how I remember it. Anyway, she comes up to the window and she goes, oh my God, it's you. Which, of course, I denied immediately. I said, it's not me. I don't know what the hell this woman's talking about. She said, oh, my God, it's you. No, I said, what? And she says, you're the guy who's the Shakespeare show on Gaia. I go, what? What? Am I being stalked? This is really weird. And she's just standing there. And it turns out she just had the intuition to come there that morning. She and her husband, and then we talked about it on Melanie's own podcast, and she has her own podcast. Great show. Look it up. It has such wonderful people on it as me and and others, I'm sure. So if you look that up, you can see me talking about it and her talking about it in her version. And her version's slightly different. It's okay. But one way or the other, Dale and Melanie got up that morning in Lincolnshire with the intuition that they have to come to Stratford-on-Avon. Why? They don't know. They just follow their intuition. And they drive there. It's 2 hours. And then they get to a certain spot, and again, I'm going to bungle it according to her version versus my version, but the one I remember is that she just said, well, we showed up, we're in Stratford. She said, I was telling Dale, oh, you know, this is the place about that bloke I've been telling you about who's so interesting on the Gaia show. And he goes, what Gaia show? And she says, oh, you know, there's this show about Shakespeare. Decoded. And she said, you know, it's all rubbish, right? Don't you? I mean, the whole thing here, Stratford, this Alan Green bloke, he's explained it all on this kind of show. And he's going, I don't know what you're talking about, love. And she says, well, you know, it's just, you should watch it sometime. It's really interesting. Yeah, it's all subterfuge. The real Shakespeare wasn't this man from Stratford, or maybe he was, and maybe, but there's a mystery. So she's explaining all this to him. And then they go to a pub, I think it was, and she's sitting there waiting for more instructions from her guides. Now, get this, you know, instructions. She's completely woo-woo. And that's the expression that I love to use for anyone like me, or one divine.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the woo, by the way. It's a thing. Go ahead, yeah. Carry on.
It is a thing. So anyway, she's doing her woo-woo stuff, and she's saying, no, it's really interesting. But they're sat there waiting for further instructions, and she says, no, this is not the place, wherever they were sitting in a pub. She says, we've got to go. And they get up and they go, and she's just walking about a quarter of a mile to this other spot, and then she stops, literally, at the bed and breakfast where I have just signed in. And she's standing there when I come out. And she does this thing, oh, it's you. How on earth does something like that happen? You have to accept that there are other angelic forces, extra-dimensional forces, call them what you will, moving us around like puppets, going, yeah, make sure she goes here, make sure Alan goes here at this time. Cue the timing, let him go. Yes, right, bump. So now, fast forward to a second. After all that, we got together, we had dinner, we realized there was a reason for us being together, that the angels or whoever had brought us together, and we became fast friends. It's really exciting to be involved with such a nutcase as Melanie Dale. So now I'm in Stratford, now permanently, which we will talk about in a bit. This is why, you know, one divine wants to tell me, to tell you why I'm here. And they visit me and we have an interview, and then we happen to walk along the same street and we all go, oh, look, oh, there's the spot where we met. Let's do a reenactment. So in a typically lunatic fashion, we start to do this reenactment, which I think was pretty funny at the time. But then Dale has added his own editing to it, and I think it's hilarious. And now they're posting this. So let's have a look at it, One Divine. This is our reenactment of the meeting. And Dale has put this title to it. I love the title because it's a riff on When Harry Met Sally, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. If I want a good chick flick, watch that one. I love it. It just kills me. I'm weeping. All right, let's show it.
It's fun. Okay, hold on.
Take 7. Previously on, when Melanie met Alan.
Can I come and knock on the window now?
Do it your way. It's not how it happened. I'm
telling you. Hello?
What the f*** is that? Who are you? What? I'm busy. I'm very famous, all right? Oh, God, that's so funny.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, so I want to comment on a couple of things. I'm going to mute you and see if it'll kill. That's better. Okay. It's just some weird, it's the connection here. Anyway, I've figured out a little toggle that's working and I'm rolling with it because that's how show business is, isn't it, showman? I'm new to the show business game. I'm being pushed out, but we got to share our story so that we know as Alan tongue-in-cheek called Melanie nuts. He knows it's not like anybody's going to call like the person who's been chasing the Shakespeare mystery, finding measurements of the Great Pyramid in the cover of a sonnet through pyramid, through periods in fonts that are not the same and geometry. So yeah, okay, nutter. But woo, I just want to stop the record here and just talk a little bit about, you know, it's, for people that have been doing this and are doing this, maybe at first it begins by, oh, I just felt like going to Stratford today. And wow, what a crazy coincidence. But at this point in the game, and I call it a game because we play it like a game because it is a game. It totally works like a game that Melanie at this point, Melanie Easom, who does this show, she will actually be on this show. And, knows at this point when she gets up what kind of hit she's getting, go to Stratford and how firm it is and how strong it is. And then you just go because you know that when you follow that, even if you don't know why you're getting it, miracles will ensue. And they did. The last thing I'll say is about the woo, because I just learned this last year. So I have to tell people this when they say woo woo. I took a class, a stone medicine class by an incredible master teacher, Sarah Thomas, and she studies Taoism and a whole lot of other modalities. But my point is the Wu came from, if I'm correct, was it Chinese or Japanese? Sorry. There was a young woman who was interested in studying the mystery arts, the esoteric arts, the deep arts of magic and alchemy and all of these things. And women were not allowed to study this in her culture. She, from a child, wanted to learn this, was attracted, had natural intuition. And so she went off on her own, ended up tuning in straight to source, Straight Juice and doing her own training with Source and learned how to quantum time jump, do all kinds of different alchemy and magic and moving matter and all of these things that we are capable of doing, and started her own mystery school and teaching of these principles that she received directly from Source. And there was nobody in comparison of her. And it was Wu. They were called Wus. And that's where Wu Wu comes from. People like us. So if I'm a Wu, I'm a Wu, and I will Wu Wu and get it direct from Source and connect with other people who are too. So I just wanted to inject that in the One Divine podcast, because this is about divining. We can divine from everything. And once we start getting that enough payback, you know, of like, okay, I'm following this. It was 2017 when I had a big initiation and I had lost everything and I went full in. That was one of the first times that I crossed the threshold of crazy. And I thought, okay, what happens? I already follow my intuition my whole life. Most of us are like born intuitive as a child or whatever. And if I followed it, I'm like, okay, what happens? I'm going to fuck it. I've lost everything. Like, let's go all in. Any turn right, do this, go down that aisle of the grocery store, whatever it was, I was being prompted to do. My intuition was prompting me to do. I was going to do it. And I just, as soon as I began, it was all in, all magic, and it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped. And I ended up coming back, even though I knew Alan for years, we ended up coming back together through magic, synchronicity, signs and symbols, and people that we were connected with, and worked together on a team with Robert Edward Grant, where we also put all these different pieces and parts together. And it's just snowballing now. The soul family is snowballing. The signs are snowballing. The connection and intuition and the strength in which we receive these messages and signs and connect to one another, because this is in fact the time of prophecy when we've come here to reawaken true human organic abilities. And it's amazing. So I just wanted to go on that little vent, because that's why this show is being prompted to feature, to share, as many are starting to awaken their intuitive gifts and thinking maybe they are nuts, maybe they are woo 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 blah blah blah, to know that it's not crazy. It is innate. We do have these abilities, and it can lead you on adventures and to find friends and soul family and purpose like you couldn't ever imagine. So I'll leave that. But I want to talk some more about some of these stories. And yeah. I put it in the headline. I wonder why. I'm going to shut that off until it's, I'll have you speak again. Alan, I was pretty deep into our relationship. I think we were in Santa Fe maybe when I first heard the story about Mount Shasta and Yogananda. And it is another synchronicity twist of events kind of story. And since I'm coming from Mount Shasta, broadcasting from Mount Shasta, I was called here, report for duty, meeting many people who are also being called here at this time to do some things. I would love to hear your Mount Shasta Yogananda story and how that came to be, because it was a pretty big one in shaping the rest of the story.
Yeah, it was. People who saw the last live that I did with you, Juan, was from Stratford on that visit in January, when I had just met Melanie and Dale. And on that, I think we called it, what did you call it? Something like manifesting miracles.
Miraculous manifesting.
Miraculous manifesting. So I told the story then. So I won't go into the whole story of how, but the backdrop is that I was given a gift of grace by the divine. Back 47 years ago, I was at a low point in my journey. I was 28 years old. I was young, foolish, stupid. You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and all of that. And the divine visited me during a drive across America. I was stone cold sober at the time, and I had an experience where I was literally just dropped into what I call unity consciousness. But it's there really are no words for it, and it was just that. I knew that I was one with everything, and I could feel it and live it and know it. It was the most blissful experience that I had ever experienced up until that moment. I did not know such a state existed. The thing that came to mind for me was the peace that passeth all understanding. But it was way deeper than just peace. It was joy, bliss. It was everything. Utterly, I was thrown into this state of consciousness. And during that experience, I was given several miraculous things happen. The state of this union with the divine lasted for 4 months. And then when it faded, I was, of course, bereft. Where have you gone? Oh, my God, where are you? It just faded away. But I knew that what I had experienced was grace. I might not have especially deserved it at the time. Certainly didn't deserve it from my behavior in that life at the time. Maybe I deserved it from some past life, but that's another aspect of it. But I thought, well, I don't deserve this. You know, I'm not a saint. I'm just an awful person stumbling around. And I was given this incredible grace. So when it faded, I knew that that was a gift, and I had to now go find it. So in my efforts to go find it, lots and lots of things, you know, lots and lots of journeys to try to find, how do I get this state of consciousness back? I already had my record deal that was given to me that day, that moment. You know, boom, want a record deal? Boom, there it is, you got it. You want the money? Boom, there's the money. And so I had rented, like you do, so as to not look too conspicuous, a red Camaro sports car. So I'm driving my brand new rented red Camaro. And I heard I should go to Shasta because there's a lot of woo-woo stuff goes on up there. So I drive up to Shasta. And my car literally is only, it's like it's got just a few hundred miles on it. And it broke down. Broke down right outside of Shasta, about 100 yards from a garage. I walk to the garage. The guy comes and looks at it, tows it in. Ooh, yeah, it needs a part. Ooh, we're not going to be able to get that part. It's going to take several days. So I'm stuck in Shasta. Of course. You know, how else are they going to grab a hold of me and shake me and wake me up? Oh, you're stuck in Shasta. So I go to a bookstore. Don't remember the name of it, but it was like the Bodhi Tree bookstore in LA. In other words, all woo-woo shit stuff. New Age, esoterica, everything you want. A smorgasbord of New Age, beautiful flower people books. And I say to the woman there, I'm looking to find my path. I had this experience where I experienced the divine, and now it's gone, and I want to find it again. So she starts prepping me. Each day she'd say, well, try this and try that and go to this one and this one. And oh, the various things that are on display there in Shasta. I don't know, the White Light Society, the Saint Germain Society, the this hypnosis group, this ET group, this, and I just went on each day to experience what this woman was sending me to, and nothing resonated. I remember sitting knee-deep in snow on Mount Shasta trying to meditate. I didn't know how to meditate, but I'm doing my best sort of posture and going like this, and I'm saying this, come get me. I wanted the extra dimensional beings to come and get me. I hear this is where they fly around. Nobody came and got me. I had one experience that was very funny that I will say. Late at night, I went into this place. I think of it in my mind, it was a Denny's, but I don't know if it was a Denny's there, but it's like a 24-hour spot, like a Denny's. And I walked in and had a snack, a cup of tea. And there was this other woman in the Denny's, and she was wearing a yellow sou'wester, like you think of the sailors, thick plastic yellow sou'wester. You're waiting for them to come and get you, are you? And I look across at her and go, sorry? She's like 90. She was 90 if she was a day. I'm waiting for them. They come and get me every Thursday evening. I'm waiting. And I go, okay, this is my ticket. This is what I'm waiting for. Yeah, they'll be here. I think I hit the jackpot. This is great. So I'm just calling across to her, like several tables apart. She stands up. She goes, yeah, they're coming. I'm ready for them. She opens her sou'wester and she flashes me. She's completely naked. It was way too much information. Check. I go, oh my God. I'm out of here. So all this was happening. I was being teased by this and this and this and this. And the final day, nothing's happened. My car is fixed. So I'm leaving. I go one last time to the book shop. Woman, I say, well, thank you for all your helpful tips, but I haven't found it. I don't know. And so, of course, then she says, oh, maybe you should try this. And she gives me Autobiography of a Yogi. And I saw Yogananda's picture on it, and I just recognized him immediately. And I went, this is it. Why did you wait a week to give me this? You know, it's all part of the game, right? So I get in my car, fixed, and I drive back down to Los Angeles, and I drive down reading the book on the steering wheel. I'm literally just... I just can't stop reading it while I'm driving down back to LA. I think I finished a third of the book or something, just driving down to LA. Sent away for the lessons, and that was it. And I don't proselytize and say people should do this. It's whatever is right for you. But that was my path. And then once I discovered the techniques that Yogananda gives, I could slowly, over a period of years, was able to reclaim that unity consciousness state through Kriya Yoga. So that's how I found my own particular path. At Shasta.
Oh, thank you for that. I, since being here in Mount Shasta, I lived here a year in 2022 to 2023, and then I went out doing some grid work and travel again for another 6 months, and I've been back here about 5 months and will be here permanently. Just got a property next month, but I've met so many people here who have this story of their car breaking down. I've met people who are here 30 years and they're like, I got here because my car broke down. There's so many stories, these crazy stories of people breaking down here or something happened and they had to like sit on this spot to happen. But, and I wanted to hear that story, but I also wanted to hear, which I don't think I've ever really heard from you, is prior to that, like, what was your receiving connection to divine like as a child in Manchester, England? I'm sure that that wasn't like, you know, regular every day. Was it like you were a vivid dreamer and you found that things really happened from that? Or you had, like, I know that I talked to angels. I've had a conversation with God since I was a child. and it didn't go away. I was aware it was, you know, they talk about pray without ceasing. Like I was constantly talking to God. And it wasn't until my own mother died that year and the year after that, I really had the entrance of the great mother aspect of God. Before it was like more dad, more angels. I was aware that I had angels and that I communicated with them, but it still was a process. I'm curious. I know dreams are a part of your modality, but how do you get from kid in Manchester to driving when you're 28 years old in starting a bliss state and knowing it's divine? Like what led up to that?
Maybe I've told you little bits of this in our own personal conversation, so that's where you're sort of getting a hit to ask about that. I, as a child, I certainly did not see angels or other beings. I know a lot of people now who do, and I think that's a marvelous thing to be experiencing, obviously, although probably quite a challenge as well. So I wasn't ever clairvoyant or clairaudient in that sense, but I did have a sense that I was invincible. I remember feeling that I could literally do anything and make things happen. And I always assumed that was just because as a child, I was aware, let's say I was aware of reincarnation. And so I understood that we all come from that abode, let's call it heaven or the astral realms or whatever you want to call it. We've just come from there where one can manifest just instantly. You want a garden? Oh, there's a garden. You want a castle? Oh, there's a castle. I mean, it's all done with thought, and you're in that space if that's the space you've come from. So children coming in are so close to that that I think that's that magic time of between birth and, let's say, running up to about 7 years old, where they're still in that space of magic and joy, right? And it gradually gets faded out from their consciousness because the world creeps in with all the no's. Don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. No, you can't. It's not intentionally negative. It's just parenting. You know, don't put your hand on the stove. Don't hurt yourself. You know, parents are concerned. But we all get a certain amount of that. So I do remember always feeling that that was a natural state. I'll give you two examples. I remember vividly going shopping with my mum. We lived above in a flat above some shops, and I was down below shopping with mum, and there was a store. It was the greengrocers, and they had a raffle going where they were raffling out a huge turkey. And it was just before Christmas, and maybe a couple of weeks before Christmas. We could never afford even a chicken at Christmas. And here was this huge turkey in the window, a raffle. And I said to my mom, I want to buy a ticket for the raffle. And, of course, she was very cautious. We didn't have any money. And she said, oh, well, you know. And I begged and pleaded, and I told her I knew the winning ticket. So she gave me whatever it was. I don't know. It was probably just 10 pence or something in those days. And I go into this shop and I said, I want a ticket. And of course, you know, I'm little. I was probably, I really don't remember, 7, 8, 9, maybe. And they gave me a ticket and I said, no, I don't want that ticket. I want that ticket. I knew the number that I wanted. And it turned out to be, of course, the winning number. So we had a turkey for that Christmas. And that number is very significant. Now, I won't go into that, but it was the number that is significant to my Shakespeare work. So, or another instance where I could remember, I would always go out into the backyard where there was a grass patch. And I would tell my mum, I'm going to get you a four-leaf clover. you know, well, we all know that's a lovely thing. You know, the idea of a four-leaf clover, does it exist? There are some, but, you know, it's very hard to find. But I could always just go out and find some. So I'm just going, oh, there's my four-leaf clover. I would take it and give it to Mum. That faded. I can't find a four-leaf clover now to save my life, but I'm still trying here at the Stratford Church. It's clover all over the place, but I can't find one. But so those experiences were present in my childhood. Nothing really extraordinarily beyond, you know, into the woo-woo world of woo. But I had that knowledge of a connection to the divine. And so when I went out into the world and began manifesting, which we've covered in the previous show that I did with you, I just knew that I could make things happen with the sheer willpower of mind. Does that answer your question completely? Maybe not.
It does, because I had never really heard sort of the childhood lead up to, like, okay, now I'm driving and I'm in bliss for 4 months. Like, there's a little bit of like a leap, and of course we're like, you know, get led in bits and pieces. Like when I was in high school, I started keeping a diary, a journal of writing down all my stuff, and it was insipid, really. It was, but I recognized quite quickly when I wrote down a list of the stuff I wanted or what I wanted to do. I was going to get this car. I was going to win the, you know, I go do the vice president of student council. That boy's cute. I want him to date him. Like if I wrote it down, and I can picture very well, like I have a vivid memory. I think that's a vision. I think that's a big part of manifesting, is really totally being in it. I'm like full color, full furniture, everything in my mind of that situation, that scenario, but also writing it down or speaking. Like I noticed quickly so that just started, and that's like 14. And so I was curious as to where yours started, just for sharing. And we're talking about angels. That is a common thing that Alan and I both share, that we communicate with angels. And when I started working with him at Crown Sterling, I remember it was the first time, you know, we'd been friends, we'd shared stories or whatever, but we hadn't kind of talked in a few years. And then we were working together, and I was saying, they said, or I got from they, and he just kind of comes by me in the conference room, was like, so who do you mean when you mean they? And I was like, well, mostly angels, but could be, you know, higher self, guides, ascended masters. I don't know, whoever wants to be on the phone for the situation, right? But he went and clarified, like, and I don't see them. I don't see angels visually. I just have always had an awareness and a gnosis and knowing of what I was receiving. And now as it's gone years and years, I have very good discernment on certain angels that I know or certain guides that I know. And then sometimes I don't, like it might just be a frequency, a collective. So I think that's interesting and important to talk about, you know, it's all one, right? You could say that, like, it's all like, if you've ever heard of Kryon, which is not an individual, it is an entourage, a frequency, a group, that comes through a guy named Lee Carroll, channels through. And I was one of the first things when I had my like bigger awakening after 2012, which many people did. And I came across a YouTube and was some of the same words, same humor, same thing. I get Kryon. That's one of the things I will bring in. But my point about that I'm getting to finally is he says it's like a big soup. And that's exactly what came through for me. It was like, yeah, you can spend all day trying to figure out who it is, what it is, or whatever, but it is part of the whole unified soup. And we can just access whatever file, memory, skill set from whatever, whenever we want to, if we can sort of hone that skill. And that's what makes the game pretty fun that what we have access to, and this is what everybody talks about, right? Like our limitlessness. And we only get the keys to the next nicer car or abilities when we can show responsibility with it, when we know how to use it. You're not going to get it all at once and just be like giving a drunk teenager keys to, you know, the Ferrari or something, right? That's kind of what was shown, but I'm endlessly fascinated by it. So I would love to bring this back around. We'll go a little bit over. It's probably going to knock off on Instagram, but we were futzing around with the sound for a while, which I'll cut out of the final podcast. But I wanted to talk about like how this journey, which is how I met you with the whole Shakespeare story. If you're not familiar with the whole story of Alan's work, on he has a show on Gaia called Shakespeare Decoded. Bard Code is his Instagram. And I think most of the people following know him pretty well, which is why they're watching. But hopefully the intent and purpose of this podcast is to get it out to new audiences. So he is in Stratford-upon-Avon, as I said, when I began the show. And he's on a vigil, which I'd love you to hear about that. All these signs, symbols, synchronicity, this path. If you look back in your whole life, you might find the addresses that you lived at, the street names, best friends, whatever, that this is an entire encoded story with foreshadowing in the movie, I always say, that once you reflect on it, it's like, wow, this really is an incredible divine matrix. And if you're paying attention and putting it together, how it is so woven, I would love to hear how the weaving has led you back. And what he's doing is really important with your prayer vigil. I wanted to acknowledge that, Alan, that I see Melanie and I were actually talking about that. Like it's so much bigger than just the prayer vigil and prayer for will and prayer for peace, but the people it's bringing together, the energy that's focusing, where it's focusing. I know that you have some other friends who are grid workers who do this work, who are coming in and you're weaving over there in Europe, and I might be going over in Lionsgate, and you met Melanie and now I met Melanie and now we're all weaving together. So I would love to hear about how long you're going to be there and what your intention and what you're doing there. Hold on. I'm going to unmute and I'm going to unmute.
Right. I got the memo, we like to say. I got the memo about, 4 or 5 months ago now, that I, as I already alluded to, I radar scanned the Holy of Holies altar stone in Holy Trinity Church in Stratford, where Shakespeare is buried and where his monument is. That's a whole story that you have to follow elsewhere because it's too much to go into here. But it's on the Gaia series. And if you just go to my website, tobeornottobe.org, and that's words, not numbers. It's not a Prince song. It's tobeornottobe.org. There's a red button, says Gaia. You just click on that, and that'll take you to a link where you can see all 7 episodes. You can sort of binge watch them if you wish. I did that scanning of the altar, which proves that there is something there inside that huge stone that is going to reveal the ultimate truth behind the Shakespeare mystery. But it was 13 years ago, and there's been no real active movement towards getting us any closer to opening or investigating that in a deep way. So I got the intuition, this time it was through a lucid dream, that I just need to take action myself. And the action that I needed to take was to come to Stratford and literally pray in front of that altar stone for as many hours per day every day that I can for 10 weeks. And that's what I'm doing here now in Stratford. So I've rented myself an Airbnb about half a mile from the church. I can walk over the hill to the church every morning. I'm there for morning prayers with the vicar, and I'm there for evening prayers, and I'm there during the day to do my praying at the altar stone, and people are thinking it's very weird. Right. What are you doing there? Is he all right? the response from the locals is very mixed. It's I didn't expect it would be easy. You know? It's like, I feel like Daniel in the lion's den, really. I've just come to the center of it all. And they know now that I'm the guy that scanned their altar, and many of them do not like that at all. And when they get introduced to me and I say, my name's Alan, they go, oh, and they turn away, right? But some of them are very, very warm and inviting as well. It's not quite 50-50, it's about 60-40 against. I intend to win them over somehow. Or if not, we don't. I don't know. But my purpose is to pray there. So I've had some interesting experiences. I was hoping to be able to pray there sort of almost non-stop, but it's just not possible. The church closes down for certain events, weddings, funerals, things like that. Plus, I've got all kinds of other things to be doing, so I can't do literally praying all day, but I'm praying, you know, roughly about 3 hours a day, sometimes slightly more, sometimes less. And the power of that is that focused attention, isn't it? I am praying a prayer that William Shakespeare left in the codes to say he wants that altar stone to be opened in public, because he's left inside there the entire secret to who he was, why there was a cover-up, what it was all about. Of course, convincing the locals that that's my purpose is very... It's tricky, because I'm beginning to realize, and I do not mean this in a derogatory sense at all, this is a Christian church. And I'm quickly learning that, oh, for instance, one of the wardens there came up to me and asked very, very deliberately, are you praying or are you meditating? I could sense that I needed to be careful about my answer. I had never thought of it before. And then I went home and Googled it. You know, what do the Christians think of prayer versus meditation? And it is staggering. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation has got nothing to do with God, it says. You find it all over the Google. No, it's all about just finding peace within yourself. It is not a religious aspect of, it's not anything to do with the divine. Meditation, nothing to do with the divine. Anyway, I answered, well, I do meditate in order to be able to increase the focus of my mind so that I can then pray more effectively. Okay, they weren't too pleased with that. It was just, and it's not staggering. It's just, oh, that's a concept that I was not prepared for. And of course, you've got this thing of it's a shame. I mean, it's present in, I do not at all want to knock people's religion, but there's inclusivity in religion and there's exclusivity in religion. And Christianity, unfortunately, mostly seems to have this exclusivity side to it, in that Jesus Christ is the only way back to God, the only savior. Where actually most of the world's other religions are inclusive, recognizing that they're all different ways to God. So I'm having to tread a very, very careful path here so that I'm not utterly detested by everybody. I had a meeting with the vicar just 3 mornings ago where he wanted to know this is deep. Are you worshipping Shakespeare? We see you there looking towards Shakespeare's monument and praying. Am I worshipping Shakespeare? Well, in my understanding of it, the person who was Shakespeare was in divine consciousness and knew precisely who he, she, it, they were, and was giving us that message. He actually says in Sonnet 121, I am that I am, and they that level at my abuses reckon up their own. It's a very, very significant line, because in that time period, King James issued an edict in 1606, said you cannot say the name of God under huge penalty fines and then ultimately torture. You can't say the name of God, you can't say the Holy Trinity, you can't say Jesus Christ, you can't say I am that, the name of God given to Moses on Mount Sinai. He says it absolutely directly in Sonnet 121 and says it in first person. I am that I am. I am divine. I am the awakened God, says Yogananda, awakening the sleeping God in you. There's no difference between us. I am. Just found my way home, and I've come here. I've incarnated back to bring everyone else to that realization who does not yet have it. So I'm there to pray for the church. I'm there to pray for there's an organization called Friends of Shakespeare's Church, for which I am raising money. I've donated, first of all the money that I raised from the first show that I did with you on Divine, I gave to the Friends of Shakespeare's Church to help them with projects that they are in the process of trying to do certain reparatory things within the church. And I'm doing that in order to, of course, cement a relationship with them, whereby they understand that I truly am here to help. And I am. I'm not doing that honestly in a manipulative way. I truly do understand, and it's a wonderful experience for me to be there and see how devoted they are to their own belief system. And I'm not knocking it at all, but each day, almost each day, they give the Eucharist at that Holy of Holies altar stone. Can you imagine? I go up there and I take the Eucharist, the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. It is so moving to me. I can barely get through it. You know, that altar stone. And the first day the vicar came to me and he said, are you okay? You seem very upset. What? He said, when I gave you the Eucharist. I said, no, I'm fine. Oh, but you look awful. You're crying your eyes out. So I had this talk 3 days ago, because each time as I'm praying there, I'm praying, you know, for 2 hours, say 3 hours, I go very deep. I don't mean to say that in any way, sort of lauding myself. You know, it's not about that. It's just that with techniques, with pranayama techniques, you can go very deep, and you can experience that unity consciousness again. It's divine. So I'm finding it hard to control that, just as I was 47 years ago when I was walking around in that state constantly. It's hard to hide it, you know. All my friends at the time back then thought I was on acid all the time. They were asking me to turn them on. Yeah, what do you got, man? Hey, I said, I wish I could. I'm not on anything. I'm on God. So So the vicar asked me to, we had a chat, which was very, very, very much needed. And I told him the story about what happened to me 47 years ago. And I said, of course, yeah, that was when I, oh, and you have to couch it in certain terms. That is when I accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as my savior. And that's true. I just didn't mention Babaji or Krishna or Sri Yukteswar or Yogananda or every other saint as being my Lord and Savior as well. I mean, you can't mix them up. You can't. So I said, yes, that's when I accepted Jesus. And it was a genuine experience. I felt Jesus' presence and I have done ever since. But you've got to be careful how you couch it, in what terms you couch it. And he wanted me to, he had brought a piece of paper with him where he wanted me to account for my sins. And I said, you want me to read this? And he said, well, if you feel comfortable, if you feel, you don't, no, I'm not saying you must, but would you confess your sins to God? And I said, quite honestly, I said, well, you know, that's going to take a while. Are you? you got time? Oh, my sins are manifold. I've got plenty of them. You want to hear them all? And it was, I mean, he was just being genuinely like, I want you to be at one at peace with God. And I said, don't you see, I am. And he just couldn't quite grasp it. And he eventually said, well, you're finding it hard to walk out of the church. I see you staggering. And I said, well, okay, I wish I could control it better. I wish I could hide it. Do you want me to pray somewhere else, maybe, where it's not upsetting people? Do you have a room where I can just pray out of view? Because I can't do anything about that. They actually sent somebody out after me as I was walking out of the grounds of the church. Are you okay? Do you need an ambulance? Are you all right? And I just had to say to him, I'm, if you must know, I'm in bliss. And I can't talk easily right now. So there's this thing going on where I don't know where that's all going to end up. Because the vicar said to me, well, we're not used to that. You know, stiff upper lip and all that, British. And I said, what do you mean stiff? I'm British. You know, I'm from Manchester. Well, we're not used to outward displays of emotion. So it's funny, isn't it? He's preaching the word of God, and I'm not. It's not for me to judge and say he's not feeling the divine presence. I don't know. Maybe he is, and he's just able to control it and hide it. I can't, and I'm finding myself having to apologize for that. But the bottom line of the point is, I am there doing that, and let the cards fall where they may. People are seeing that I'm sitting still for 2 hours, and they're asking me, how do you do that, and what are you doing, and are you, you know, why? And I'm saying, I am praying Shakespeare's last wish. Shakespeare in the codes says that he's left something in the altar stone and he wants the world to know about it. And so with that in mind, I have also recorded a song called A Say a Prayer for Will, and it is available, and I hope One Divine will put up a link to that in the show as to where you can hear it. You can buy it for $1 or whatever you want to give for it, and all the proceeds go to the other thing that I'm literally launching, which is the Shakespeare Foundation. So do you want to just segue into a talk about that, and then I'll describe what the Shakespeare Foundation is, or where do you want to go?
I will. We can wrap up with that, and I wanted to hear about that. I know a lot about it from when we first met, and that was one of the things that made me recognizing you, that you were receiving the same memo as other people, just the way that it's even arranged. So many people are receiving instructions and blueprints for collaborative, cooperative, new earth vision institutions, schools, communities, everything. And I recognized his, and he'll speak to that of what he's supporting with that and through his discoveries. But I wanted to comment just quickly about what he was talking about with, you know, people not really understanding a spirituality that's not rooted in dogma or tradition or a certain thing. Like, they don't know where to put that. Like, what bucket does it go in? And when I was receiving a lot of prophecy and being shown, it was probably right around the time I met Alan, around 2013, 2014, I was being shown what was coming, some of which is all of the censorship. All of this is why I believe the prophecy I receive and I speak, because I'm living in it at this moment, at this massive awakening. But the censorship that was to come, how we would be communicating more in pictures, music, symbols, signs, hashtags. And I heard what was spoken to me was, there will be a witch hunt to end all witch hunts. There will be a witch hunt to end all witch hunts. And the key being, end all witch hunts. Because so many are back at this time in one embodiment, one incarnation, because this is the time of prophecy. This is the time where we all are awake. We know we have divine confirmation and gnosis that doesn't rely on a textbook or a pastor or anything. People get confused when I talk about it too. Like, I love Jesus. I talk to Grandma Anna. I talk to Mother Mary. I also talk to what you would call ETs, different dimensional beings, people who have passed over. I talk to them all. I talk to the grass. I talk to trees. That's what we can do, because it is all one and it is all divine. But that confuses people who have been stuck in these different boxes. And the end all witch hunts will happen because there are so many of us. And this happens all day long right now for me anyway, with the crew that I know. We're not only receiving information from the divine, but it connects and confirms with other people who are also receiving from divine. Literally, we'll get the same word, the same themes, the same directions to go to the same place if we're the ones that are supposed to be there. It's happening so much clearer, so much faster right now. And I personally have had the experience where people in Christianity who are awakening themselves within it, because it's not for any one group. We're all having an awakening of consciousness. So they've leaned into me, like, heard a couple of things I've said, but felt comfortable enough as a bridge by somebody who does pray, who does actually believe in Jesus, Buddha, you know, like whatever, things that are familiar to them. And then they're like, okay, can you tell me more about that? I've always said, like, people be like, what do I burn again? You know, like, what's a smudge thing or whatever. But like, when you don't fit into a box, people don't know what to do with that. But more and more of us are coming forward, sharing a truth, knowing where to go, what to do. This is where there's no governance needed, right? I've been like in Egypt with Alan and groups of people, and everyone was intuitive and had their own little magic powers, like the Avengers or the Guardians of the Galaxy, and nobody had to be told anything. We knew where to go. Oh, somebody's going into that corner to do this, or they're burying a stone or praying over there or whatever. There was no organization needed for it. Well, that's kind of dangerous, isn't it, for society that's built on top down? So I think it's an exciting time to be alive. And I'll turn it back over to you, Alan, to share about the Shakespeare Foundation. But I just wanted to say I am in love with everyone who has the balls, who has the guts to come forward. You know, you want to think, have people turn their eye, like, shave your head and name yourself a number called One Divine. Who the hell do you think you are? That is part of it, because you are One Divine too. You know, in my Instagram, I am One Divine. So everybody, like, you read it, I am One Divine, because we are. And there's an alchemy to the spoken word. There's an alchemy to putting that into our systems of oneness and divinity. And as we all share and let our freak flag fly, and share how we receive divine, how we are divine, and the crazy, amazing miracles that happen when we embrace it and move into it, then, you know, anything is possible. And right now, you're feeling this energy right now. If you're at all a little bit sensitive, like my ears are ringing. There's been 7 X-class solar flares. We're moving it along pretty nicely, and prophecy is unfolding. And I would love to hear about your Shakespeare Foundation. I will share that in the podcast description link and on Facebook where this is airing. But this is an amazing, miraculous time to be alive. And I am so grateful for all of you who are listening in, all of you who are in my soul family circus. And we reunited. And thank you, Alan. I'm going to put your mic back on and mine off so we don't echo. I hope that this audio is usable enough. I think it's all right. And I'd love to hear about the Shakespeare Foundation that has come from this. So like, yeah, we get things. Last thing I'll say is, yeah, we receive information. We receive instruction and guidance. What are we doing with it? Ultimately, it's to serve and to bring us into oneness and to move forward into a more intuitive, driven, divine life at a next level of energy. So we need to build these things. And that's one of the things that Alan's doing. Hit it, Alan.
Thank you, Juan. I at the same time that I came here, I launched 2 things. One was the song that I told you about, Say a Prayer for Will. There'll be a link to that. It's available online. And that came together miraculously as well. I had worked with my dear friend, James Guthrie, 46 years ago, on my Arista album. He was engineer and co-producer. That's when we first worked together. We've remained friends, really deep, good friends for all these years. He went on to produce Pink Floyd's The Wall and just about everything else that they did subsequent to that, plus a whole host of many major artists that you've all heard of. Just look him up online. And I called him one morning and I said, on the same intuition that I must come to Stratford and pray ceaselessly for 10 weeks to draw attention to the altar, study altars, and to Shakespeare's last wish and prayer. I wrote a song, of course, Say a Prayer for Will, which basically tells of that story. And I called James, and he's always, always, always busy. He honestly is just always, right now he's involved in doing a remix of Pink Floyd's album Animals, doing a surround sound mix. I mean, it just never ends. It just goes on and on and on. That group was 50 years ago, right? Their stuff is still selling like crazy. But I just had the intuition. I called him up and I said, I know you don't have any time, but I've done this song and I'm no good in this. You know, I can't record myself. I'm not good with the tech side of things. But I possibly, if... And he said, oh, of course, come on. And come up to Lake Tahoe where his studio is. So I went up and we recorded it in 2 days. But then, not content with that, he spent all another 2 to 3 weeks on it, mixing it, adding his own guitar and bass parts to it. And I had played various keyboards on it, mellotron, piano, harmonium. So it has turned out to be a really beautiful piece, and I hope you would listen to it. I'm very proud of it, and that is going, all the proceeds are going to the other thing that I launched at the same time, which has been a long-term dream. I've been doing this Shakespeare work, play, these discoveries for 20 years now, coming up on 20 years next month. And my goal has always been to have a foundation for the arts in the name of the true Shakespeare, because the arts is always the most underfunded area, discipline. Of course, it's always cut, you know, for every $100 that the United States invests in science, not that I'm saying we shouldn't invest in science, but for every $100 the government invests in science, research, they invest 46 cents in arts. It's completely out of whack, and it's unbalanced, and we cannot have a healthy civilization that is only science, 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 science. Left brain, left brain, left brain, left brain. No creativity, no art. Art is what thrills the soul, the heart, wakens us up. So it's always been my goal to have a foundation which would support the arts in the name of the true Shakespeare. And I've launched that now. It's a non-profit. If you give to it, it's all tax deductible in the US anyway. It's tax deductible. I don't know. I think you have to check with your accountant for other countries, but parts of it will be deductible. But in the US, it's all completely tax deductible. TheShakespeareFoundation.org. So I launched that. And so, again, that's everything that I am, that I raise by people going into that is going towards research and the arts and education. So please support that if you can. It would mean the world to me, because that's the main focus of what I'm doing here, besides hopefully opening the altar. Experiences that I've had here are, even just in the first few days that I arrived, they've been extraordinary. There are always little hints that, oh, you're on the right track. I was meditating. I was praying. I wasn't meditating. I was meditating. The second day I was here, and I'm sitting like, you know, I have to be careful not to sit like this. You know, I'm not doing a pranayama technique, hands on, because that, I know they'd throw me out for that. So I just fold my hands and put them on my back. Anyway, I was praying. It was pretty deep, and I came out of it after about an hour and a half. And I opened my eyes, and there's a woman standing in front of me, and she says, "Alan?" And I'm just opening my eyes, and I'm going, I thought I'd ascended. I thought, oh, I've gone home. This is great. It's an angel. Didn't recognize her. She recognized me. She's been standing there. I don't know how long waiting for me to come out of this deep meditation. And she said, "I saw you 5 years ago at a Nassim Haramaini event up in California. Is this you?" Said, "Yeah." She was just, I said, "What are you doing here?" "Me and my husband, we were driving from London to Liverpool, and we just decided to stop off here in Stratford. I had no idea why. And we just walked into the church and happened to be there, and she recognizes me. She stood there waiting for me to come out of meditation. We went and had lunch and chatted, and I mean, again, another angelic thing. I'm like, what? You just decided to come here? That's my second day here." The angel's going, "It's okay, you're on track. You're going to attract people. If you build it, they will come." Right out of nowhere. That was the second day. The next day, third day, I come out of the evening prayer, which was a public service. There's two exits in the church. I could have gone this way or that way, but I happened to think, should I go that way? No, I went, oh, I'll go this way. I go out that way, and there's a guy standing outside the door there, and he says, "Tommy Armour?" Well, you know from the show that I did where I described early on in my recording career where they changed my name from Alan Green to Tommy Blue to Tommy Rainbow to Tommy this and Tommy that and blah, blah, blah. Every 2 months we had a different image meeting, and I told that story on One Device. Particular show about manifesting miracles. And I tell the story how I got so fed up with these with them changing my name every couple of months, that I showed up for the final Image meeting when the album's going to be released in a suit of armor. And I said, visor, I opened the visor, I've got a shield and a mace, chainmail and all this. And I said to all the suits around the table, it's me. My name is Tommy Armour. And guess what? Because they changed my name to Tommy Blue once, and they said to me, you always wear blue, even on the radio. This is the mentality of the music industry. Like, they're not creative enough themselves to write the music or the song, so they decide they will create you so that they can sit in front of the television a couple of years later and say, ah, that was my idea, Tommy Blue. That was mine. I called him that. You know. So I said, I always wear armor, even on the radio. And of course, they just dropped me from the label. They said he doesn't take his Image meeting seriously enough, but I didn't care because I had a system and I manifested another record deal. I told that story on your show one, and watching was this person, friend of mine, who is wonderful. His name's Cisco. He lives in Kansas, and he's a great graphic arts designer, and he has throughout the years been sending me T-shirts of designs he's made of my album cover, I Surrender, mixed in with the Shakespeare's sonnets and stuff. He's very, very talented. And he showed up, and he's there, and he goes, Tommy Armour? And I go, Cisco?
Cisco.
He flew in from Kansas to see me. He knew I was there. But he just wanted to surprise me. So that was the third day I was there. 2 days after that, and this is the best of all, it was not the best, it was wonderful that Cisco showed up. And he stayed for a few days, and we had a wonderful time together, and he prayed with me in the church. A couple of days later, I'm at morning prayers with the vicar. It's a private thing, it's not open to the public. It is if they want to come, but nobody comes. It's way early in the morning. But I made it my business to be there with him every morning at morning prayers. And this woman comes in halfway through and interrupts the whole prayer service. He's reading from Exodus, the vicar. And she comes and goes, sorry, I'm late. I couldn't find the door. Real Manchester, thick Manchester accent. And he's in the middle of, and she doesn't wait to let him finish. She just barges in. Sorry, I'm late. And he says, yes, please sit down and join us. Oh, it's all right. I just couldn't find the door. All right, carry on. It's just wonderful. And at the end of the morning prayers, she says, I just wanted to lay a flower. I wanted to lay a rose at Shakespeare's grave. I do this quite often. I come and I put a rose at his grave. And she says, and I've written a poem. And I wondered, could I read it to everybody here? And the vicar says, no. he says, no, we don't have time for that. And the look on her face was, she was so disappointed. And she said, oh, but it's only short, and I wrote it special, and I think he'd like it. I think everybody would like it. He said, well, no, I'll help you put the rose on Shakespeare's grave, but I have to go now. I can't. And he turned her down. Maybe he was busy, okay, but I thought, oh, that's a shame. So I said to her, I would love to hear your poem, so please come back. So she goes and lays a rose on Shakespeare's grave. She comes back and she says, oh, thank you. I'm so pleased that you want to hear it. And I said, well, let's go to the altar, which is right by Shakespeare's grave, and why don't you read it to him there? So we go to the altar. And I happened to see her open up her piece of paper with the poem on it. Just as she's about to start reading it, I see the title. A Poem for Will. And I've just written, Say a Prayer for Will. And she shows up with a red rose to lay on Shakespeare's grave to read A Poem for Will. What? And she read it, and it is beautiful. She's really a talented writer. It's not just, it was lovely. And so then I said, thank you for that. I have to share with you now the song. And I took her outside. We went and sat outside by the River Avon, and I played her the song on my computer. And she sat next to me, and we actually filmed it. Cisco was with me, and we filmed it. And he's going to put it online somewhere at some point. And another friend, another angel, another, I mean, she lay on my head, on my shoulder as the song finishes. Oh, that was lovely. And she's from, I said, where are you from? She's from the town where I was born. And she just shows up. So there was the three things that happened within 4 days of my getting here to say, if you build it, they will come. They will come in legions. So the Shakespeare Foundation is off to a really good start. I will tell you, just one person actually just, I mean, we're asking for you to donate. And that's always been hard for me to do, to just ask for help. But it's time, you know. I'm here. I'm dedicating 10 weeks to renting an Airbnb. I'm just doing it on my own dime. But if you can support the foundation, that would be wonderful. One person actually sent in $10,000. Said thank you. We really admire the work you're doing already. It's one person. So we're asking, you know, people are sending in $25 or $50 or whatever. One person just sent $10,000. Really admire what you're doing. You know, I'm not asking for $10,000, but if you can afford it, great, please. I mean, just opening your heart and saying, I want to do this. I want to bring truth to light about this magnificent, unknown, unsung story about who Shakespeare is and what his mission was, which was really a divine mission to tell us we are all it. You are all, just as he says, I am that I am. He's saying, you are too. Get used to it. You are the divine. And as I end the Gaia series with the expression that really sums it up, which is, what is he really saying when he says to be or not to be? It's been conjectured, of course, forever. You know, what on earth does that mean? And in the play, it seems to be that he's saying, you know, he's arguing with himself whether to commit suicide or not, to live or not. But really what he's really saying is to be or not to be. We all have the choice to be who we truly are, the divine, or not to be. To continue wearing the mask of our communal Midsummer Night's Dream that we are living over and over and over, and we can incarnate again over and over and play every part that we want to ever play for eternity. We can have millions of incarnations, and that's it. And he said, that's fine too. I love drama. I love drama. I've written all these dramas. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And each in his own blah, 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 plays many parts. But at the same time, he's saying, but you have that choice. Once you know that you are the divine, you are the I am that I am, you have then the choice to be. Am I going to be who I truly am and take off that mask, own it? And then you have the obligation, like all the great ones do before us, to come and wake up their friends, their brothers, their sisters, who still do not quite remember who they are. You have, that's a spiritual obligation. It's the Bodhisattva vow, isn't it? The Dalai Lama that comes back and back and back, Yogananda who comes back and back and back, who says, I will come back if need be a trillion times. Oh, just imagine. He wrote that poem. It's a being who has gone home, knows utterly who they are. I am the divine, and I can live the rest of my eternity in bliss. But I can't, so long as the rest of me is still out there. in pain and suffering. So I vow to come back again and again. He says, trillion times, so long as one stray brother or sister is left still in delusion. I am the awakened God, awakening the sleeping God in you. And so when Shakespeare says to be or not to be, he's saying, that's the question. To be who you truly are, the I am that I am, or not to be, and keep on wearing that mask of our Midsummer Night's Dream, and play and play and play and play and play until you just can't take it anymore. And you realize and you remember, I am, and so are you. And so my job now, all of our job, is to remind our brothers and sisters who still yet do not quite know who they are deep down. You're it. Get used to it. So that's the purpose of what I'm doing in the prayer vigil, and it's the purpose of the Shakespeare Foundation. So please give whatever you can. If you can give monetarily, that's wonderful. But you can also give in your prayers. And so we're going to start one new thing, and we're creating that website right now, and it's not quite ready. It'll be ready in a couple of days' time, called ShakespeareVigil.org, a holding place for where people can decide, I want to pray with you. Just like these people have shown up physically, and more are coming, and I can't say who right now because I would be, it's just not been made public yet, but a couple of people are arriving to pray with me who have enormous followings, millions of people, and they're going to go online and ask their followers to pray with me in this prayer vigil. And so there's a website going to come online that says, yes, I can donate 15 minutes on such and such a date, or I can pray an hour, or I can pray half an hour, and I will do this. And gradually, all of that will go online. Imagine the power, the cumulative power of focused attention on focusing on that altar and the truth that is in there. And at the same time, that it's going to go towards supporting arts in the name of the true Shakespeare, just like the original Shakespeare truly did. The man Edward de Vere was the original patron of the arts. He was the richest nobleman in the land, and he bought a place in London called Fisher's Folly, where all the artists and all the philosophers and all the poets and playwrights of the time would come to be with him in the salon. And he just sold his land and his castles and his everything to promote them. He published them anonymously, as well as his own work anonymously. All he was interested in, the only reason he had his lands and his money, the only thing he wanted to do with it was to sell it, to promote art. That's what he did 400 years ago anonymously. So I have wanted to, the Shakespeare Foundation, to carry on in his name, doing what he did anonymously, but now openly in his name, right? And so this place, the vigil website, will be for people to say, I want to pray with you. So you'll go to that website, just enter your information, name, email, date I want to pray, how long I want to pray, and the mechanism will take care of itself. It's like just a database, and it will add it all up so that we'll be able to see, oh, this week, how many people we've got now, you know, whatever, 5,000 people are praying, and we've logged 10,000 hours. 6 months, it'll be 1 million hours. In a year, it will be 500 million hours of prayer for Shakespeare. That's the intention, and that is going to get things done. It's going to open that altar and bring the truth to light.
Beautiful. Thank you. And thank you, Alan. And I think that it would be appropriate. One of the things that I do, this is only the third episode, but I do it in everything that I do to make it sacred. And It's my One Divine podcast, so I'm going to end it with a prayer. Since we've talked about praying, I open it with clearing space and doing my own dropping in to connect to source. But I wanted to just speak to all that he just spoke to. I talked about it on the miraculous manifesting gathering that we did in class that he did as well. But the energetic and the metaphor and the act of what he is doing, or even when anyone is praying, and that's what magic is. You can make a cloud, a cotton ball. It's the intention that you are, you know, praying for clear skies or whatever it is. But in Shakespeare, there is every human story ever told. There is love, betrayal, you know, clashing of cultures, everything you can think of is in there. And to have all of those manuscripts, which have never been found, wherever they may be, energetically, to be holding the truth, to be holding every story of humanity and emotional and spiritual and every flavor of envy to love to everything else held energetically and metaphorically within these works. Not only that, codes and keys and messages for future humanity, who we are now, a family of light who has come over and over and over again, like he said with Yogananda, the Bodhisattva, those of us who have done that work. If you're listening to this now, you are probably one of them who have come at this time to do this work, to complete this mission, because this is tournament time. And the energetic importance of bringing people together in prayer over these stories, over this, for peace, for truth, which is all coming out right now, in case you didn't notice, anywhere you look, the secrets can't be held forever. And the truth is coming out in this new time, in this new age. And we had to kind of find out and solve the puzzles ourselves. And now we have people who are all coming together, who all hold pieces of that puzzle, that we're seeing it very quickly. And we're all arranging in the right combination to do what needs to be done to take us to our next level. So with that, I'd love it if you drop in. Thank you for those who have hung on for these stories and this journey and imperfect audio and all of that. Drop in to your own I am presence, your own divine presence. Connect in with your higher self, with your guides, your angels, the one, mother, father, God, source. We don't have to name it or give rules to it. We invite it all in right now. As we give gratitude for those who are coming together now in faith, in knowing with their intuition, following the signs to find each other, to find their way, to find their purpose, to move this collective into a better, higher space, learn from our mistakes, learn our lessons from our stories, that we might experience a lightness of being, of our own divinity, and how that is amplified when we come together in unity, and how we absolutely do have the power connecting with divine, our divinity, the divinity in one another, and the whole, to absolutely solve any problem before us. We pray for peace. We pray for an end of suffering. And we pray for a continuation of the fun as we explore this game together. Thank you all for joining. Bless you, bless you, bless you. Bless your mission, Alan. Bless all of us as we try to navigate these times, which are challenging, but they're making us grow and learn. Thank you. Amen. Oh, so it is. It is done. Thanks. And strength.